In 1976, it was thought we were on the brink of another major flu outbreak. Medical science appeared to be prepared. The experts planned to use their best weapon yet, prevention with the flu vaccine. 500 soldiers in Fort Dix, New Jersey, came down with the flu in February of 1976. Private David Lewis died, and it was determined that he had suffered from swine flu. At the time, it was feared that approximately 500 other soldiers on the base were ill with the same strain of influenza, and the alarm was sounded. In March 76, President Gerald Ford announced the biggest immunization program in history.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States.
Ford's intention was to vaccinate every man, woman, and child in the United States. Vaccine was rushed into production and imported in great quantities. The cost was to be about $135 million. And the first batch of vaccine was delivered on November 1st. The first public swine flu clinic opened 3 weeks later. From the beginning, the program was criticized for being hastily implemented and unnecessary. But over 50 million people in North America were inoculated at a cost of $100 million before investigators discovered an apparent increase in a rare paralytic disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome among the recently vaccinated. This and the fact that the epidemic failed to materialize led to a quick end to the vaccination program in December 1976.
Researchers and experts now fear that the failure of the swine flu epidemic to materialize in 76 will have detrimental effects on preparations for future pandemics. Dr. Arthur Silverstein was an advisor to the U.S. Senate Health Committee in 1976 and has written a book about the swine flu scare. Dr. Silverstein, you called your book about the experiences of 76 pure politics, impure science. Why is that the right image for those experiences?
I think it's the right image because whereas one still does, didn't then and still doesn't know all that much about the science of influenza virus, one knows a fair amount about how politics works in Washington. And politics worked very smoothly, although the science did not in the 76 flu outbreak.
Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On the show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, planet, and all of our rights, who suppress the natural solutions to all of these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the Hippocratic oath taken to first do no harm. I left my career as a surgeon in the early 1990s after witnessing research fraud, experimentation on poor people, and euthanasia. After the brain damage of my only child born in 1996 from vaccines he received, due to my belief in what I had been taught in medical school about vaccines, I started researching what they really are, which is create all autoimmune disease, non-traumatic seizures, cancer, and genetic damage in people and in pets. I also started studying natural therapies to reverse the diseases caused by Big Pharma, as well as how to detox the toxins we are exposed to. In 1997, I developed the Hippocratic Protocol to reverse all diseases, and in 1999, I created the diagrams on my websites, including the big picture of all disease, which is the first diagram found on both of my websites, reversingvaccineinducediseases.com and drcarly.com. I strongly suggest that you print out those diagrams and listen to the YouTube videos posted there where I explain these diagrams, which are based on pure common sense and have never been refuted, despite a $10,000 reward I posted on drcarly.com in 2006 for any white coat to refute them on the air. To this day, I've received no takers to this challenge. And let me also mention that I posted a new YouTube video on Friday. It is a recording of a call I made into the alleged Free Speech TV, where I mentioned the elephant in the room in regards to Obamacare, that it doesn't cover anything natural and it forces us to go down the big pharma road. And right after I posted that new YouTube video, if you go to my YouTube channel, which is drcarly2, you will see that on the homepage it says there are no videos posted here or something to that, you know, effect. So they've already, you know, basically played with it. But if you look to the right, you will see that all the videos are there. But, you know, most people in their brain-dead state will go to that channel and see it says there's no videos posted here and they'll just go away. So now I have to waste more time figuring out how to fix that. So it's never-ending wastage of time. But, you know, everything they do tells me that, you know, I'm right over the target. And apparently they didn't want not only for me to tell people what the elephant in the room is in regards to Obamacare, but they didn't want me to reveal that Free Speech TV is also a fraud. So it's funny how that worked out. Anyways, thanks to the persecution I encountered due to my work, including the abduction and ongoing state-sanctioned torture of my only child, I was forced to face the truth that all the problems we face are being caused intentionally, and the solutions that have been developed by people of conscience who step out of the boxes created when one becomes a quote-unquote licensed professional in any field are being suppressed. Facing the reality that the psychopaths which control our world have created a hell on earth intentionally is the critical step in bringing forth an anti-hell. Overstanding the simplicity of the master template of how this hell has been created makes the people of conscience realize that the antidote is equally simple. All we need to do is say no to the predators, to stop loving them, forgiving them, making excuses for them, and especially to stop funding our own destruction. It is my intention to give you the truth of what I and my guests have learned, to arm you with the confidence to ask the hard questions, which will not only cause the predators to run away, but will also cause you to face the monsters destroying your own lives. There is an army of people of conscience standing up. And so this is the good news. Our very survival is being threatened, and it's time to stand up, speak out, and when necessary, shout, because silence is consent. And if you do not stand up and speak out, you are aiding and abetting your own destruction, thus acting as an accomplice to those murdering you and those you love. Speaking the truth and asking hard questions in great numbers is the road to anti-hell. Bypassing religious beliefs that only some man in the sky can save us is very important, as religion prevents logic, reasoning, formation of a plan to save ourselves, and then taking action. For only acting on the truth will save those murdering. Believing the lies or doing nothing will enslave you. Confronting evil with documented truth is all we need to do. Compromise with evil is impossible, and when evil is on the run, that's when we press harder. Whatever false beliefs you have about any subject, that is what is being used to control you. Overstanding the puppet masters allows us to see the master template of the predators' crimes against humanity, as well as how they use psyops operatives to divide and distract people of conscience. We can then cease being prey and destroy the predator bloodline psychopaths that have created this hell on earth. And I strongly suggest that if you are afraid, go to the YouTube channels and watch a YouTube entitled Do Not Fear Death by Dr. Rauni, R-A-U-N-I, Kilde, K-I-L-D-E. Because it's really amazing how it works out. When you lose your fear of death, you're basically unstoppable. If you think my work is important, please tell others about this show. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult from them for me. To learn how, from me. To learn how I do consults, click on the services tab on my reversingvaccineanddiseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. I also have a toll-free number, 888-321-6751, on which you can contact me from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. If you get a strange message that the number has been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you because strange things are happening all the time. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for international clients and radio shows. So if you have another way to contact me, email or the toll-free number, please do so that way because I just can't have hundreds and hundreds of Skype contacts. It takes too long to find people. I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice. Rather, I teach you what I would do if I were you to reverse disease with natural therapies in people and in pets. And, of course, you must realize that the invention of insurance only covers big pharma therapies. So if you want to actually learn how to heal yourself, you know, you'll have to pay for things out of your own pocket. And I can assure you that is intentional by the monsters. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 0208-144-3781 or Skype the producer of the show at TCT for These Changing Times, TCT-calls. All lowercase. Very important, callers need to mute their phones or Skype while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever's speaking. Please wait until the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the guest and the topic of the week. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase a silver lungs colloidal silver generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator. I recommend myself and all my pets. We're getting all kinds of strange noises here, board ops, so I don't know what's going on, but I'll continue. And let me just say, colloidal silver kills all organisms that it's ever been tested with. However, once you've been inoculated with them, the colloidal silver is not going to do the job. But at least you can protect yourself from the vaccinees that are coughing and sneezing on you, as well as the chemtrails that are unloading who knows what. Mycoplasma is one thing I know for sure they're definitely dumping on us. On today's show, the answer to the question, what's ailing the world, is medical doctors of conscience being attacked by the medical mafia. And my special guest is Robbie Sky Campbell, MD. She is the wife of J.B. Campbell, who will be on my show on the 29th of this month. He's already been on my show on Orion Talk Radio. And I just want to mention his extremely important blog. It is J, as in Jack, B as in Bruce, Campbell, extremismonline.com. I strongly suggest you check out that that blog, whatever it is, website. I don't even know. I'm not that computer savvy, but appears to be a blog because he's constantly adding things. But at any rate, the way I describe J.B. Campbell is that if you watch the movie V for Vendetta, J.B. Campbell is V. And it's very important for people to realize that we do have some real men in our midst. But one thing I want to do before I bring J.B., I'm sorry, before I bring J.B.'s wife, Robbie, on, is play a tape for you. Very short. I was on a show out of the UK and Canada Thursday morning from midnight to 1:30 a.m. While I was on the show, I heard my phone ringing, checked my messages after I got off the air, and I just want to play you the message that I received, a death threat. So listen up.
Your messages, press 1. Save voice message from telephone number 760705. 888 received today at 1:22 a.m.
Stop lying to people, you piece of shit. You know, after all this 2012 stuff is done, and people like you are going to disappear, because everybody's going to be sick and tired of this pseudoscience nonsense that you're spreading around in your stupid little circle of backpatting morons.
So I hope that that came through, and I'm playing it for you for a free reason, a few reasons, one of which is to let you know that now I'm being told I'm going to disappear, and I have no fear. Come and get me, boys and girls, because I can assure you there's going to be some consequences. But second of all, an amazing thing happened as a result of this call. As you heard, the phone number was given out, you know, by my answering machine, because I have my phone set up so that I will not receive any calls from anybody that blocks their number. Now, the number is 760-705-8888. Please write that down, 760-705-8888. Put it into Google, because I knew that Google had a feature that if you put anybody's phone number into Google, not only will it tell you who the person is, but it'll give you a map to their home. So I thought to myself, okay, let me see who this minion is. And I have my answering machine ready to go. He says he's later on in the message he's going to call me back. So far he hasn't called me back. I hope he does. Although I usually don't answer my phone at 1:30 in the morning. I happen to be up because I was doing the show. But it's really amazing what you get when you put this number into Google, 760-705-8888. As it turns out, another wonderful service that Google has provided for the monsters is that anybody that uses their Google chat feature, their Google chat phone, all Google chat users are assigned this number as a caller ID, no matter what Google account they're calling from. So it's a generic number. And if you, you know, check it out, like I said, on Google, you will see there's a whole series, over 10 pages, of people that have reported getting calls from all over the world, threatening calls, con man calls, etc., etc. So I just wanted to let you know that if you get a call from that number, this is what's going on. Google has made it possible for minions, con men, and people that give death threats to make phone calls without you knowing who they are. Isn't that special? So on that note, I would like to bring on Dr. Robbie Sky Campbell, married to a real man, as I said, who will be on my show on the 29th of this month. And she's a medical doctor who has also had an experience, not exactly like mine, but basically trying to do the right thing. And, of course, they took away her license. And one of the things I'm trying to make all of you realize is that if, because people tell me all the time, we need more doctors like you, Dr. Carly. Well, guess what, people? If you want more doctors to stand up to possibly lose everything, including their lives, then you better start supposing the ones who are doing so. Because so far, it's not looking too good. You know, people do not stand up. Everybody that's listened to my thousands of shows I've done over the last 10 years knows that my only child has been satanically ritually abused for over a decade because of my work, that I have no contact with him. Nobody seems to care. And, you know, taking away my medical license, this is nothing because, of course, now I'm a teacher. So that actually got me out from under their boot. But I'm very disturbed that people seem to only care about themselves. They don't care about others who are losing everything that matters because they're doing the right thing. And you're going to have to, you know, change that attitude if you want people to start to stand up and do the right thing, because it's a very hard thing to do. So anyways, I'm very happy to have Dr. Robbie Sky Campbell join me. And I'll just ask you, Dr. Campbell, to just introduce yourself. I don't know if you have a website. If you do, please give that out. But just if you could just give, you know, your background, and then we're going to go into what you experienced. That's what we're going to talk about on the show.
Okay.
Take it away.
That's great. Hi, I'm Dr. Robbie. That's how I'm known by, Dr. Robbie. I went to Northwestern and graduated with a degree, Bachelor of Science in Medical Technology and Microbiology. I went to the Art Institute of Chicago for 2 years while I was working at the blood bank at Northwestern. And then I went to medical school at Rush Medical College in Chicago and did surgery for a year in Chicago at the Masonic Hospital.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. I even got my degree at a Masonic temple.
Uh-oh.
My medical degree at the Masonic temple in Chicago. And then I did internal medicine and was in Arizona. I went into medicine thinking that I was going to help people.
Yeah.
I was sick as a child a lot with asthma and different ailments, probably because I was vaccinated.
Hello.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had asthma and pneumonia and asthma and pneumonia for many, many years and was on medication and prednisone and had lots of chest x-rays. And now we know that any kind of radiation that we get is additive. But at the time, when I went into medicine, I thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to be able to make a difference in the world. I was a true believer. And in residency, when I was in Arizona, I started seeing things in between the cracks of what was going on. Things just weren't right. People weren't being treated right. The VA was using its people as experiments. I had to go through extraordinary efforts just to get things done for the people because they tried not to get things done. I'd be running down the halls to meet the 5 p.m. deadline just for a CAT scan or an MRI or something. And I would put it on the desk and I'd jump up in the air and I'd say, I made it before 5, and they would be so angry at me because they would hear me running down the hall trying to get there just in time because there's all these deadlines. They make it impossible to get anything done for anyone in the VA. It's just horrible. The paperwork is incredible, and then the timelines are incredible, and so I not only there, but at the other hospital, Good Samaritan, I started seeing cracks. And I started depending more on my intuition that I always had with me, which is coming from my heart. And I would speak to people's spirits, to their soul, especially in intensive care when people were unconscious, and I would tell them, you know, what's going on, just like we're talking right now. I had to do all this in private because behind my back in this day and age, which is unbelievable, people started calling me a witch. People, because they couldn't understand how the miracles that were happening for me, a person like myself, who wasn't like the chosen ones, you know, the chosen ones that were the top in the residency. Well, I became the top in the residency program. People wanted to be underneath me. I was top I believed in the system still. But then everything crashed, started the crash on me. And that's when I had to really start depending on what was coming from my heart. And so I started treating people after the residency. I started treating the elderly. It wasn't, to me, at first, it wasn't as exciting as being in the intensive care unit, where everything was about technology. But I soon learned that it was the most exciting thing that I had ever been given by our Creator, to be able to work with these amazing people. Dispelling the myth that our medical system is the greatest in the world is something that is crucial today. I think after the Depression, the time of the Depression, where millions of people actually died from starvation and disease, and that's not ever talked about. But the time of the Depression, so many people were destitute and craving for something to bring them out. And that's when we had the World's Fair in Chicago. And it was all about technology. And technology became our savior to bring us out of this depression. And so over these decades, we have learned that technology is superior to everything else, and that's not true. That is one of those false beliefs that has been stuck in our heads since we were children, and it's not true. So many people are being used as guinea pigs in the world today, throughout the world, and especially the third world countries. But also in America, in almost all clinics.
Yes. Okay, if I could just interrupt you, because I'm jumping out of my chair here.
Oh.
I have to comment on a few things that you've said and ask you a few questions. First of all, of course you are right about not only intuition, and the reason that you were looked upon as a witch is because you were actually helping people. One of my clients with cancer told me an experience they had, which I'll never forget. Before they contacted me to learn how to reverse their cancer with natural therapies, they had learned about the importance of, you know, eating organic food and alkalinizing, especially with organic green juicing and things of that nature. They had gone to Sloan Kettering and told the oncologist that they were doing this, and the Sloan Kettering oncologist's response was, that's witchcraft. So, you see, this is how we live in this opposite-day situation. Everything has been turned around. Lies are truth, and truth are lies. And as far as the VA goes, I also had to do a stint in the VA as a rotation, and that's where I saw what's going on. The goal is to actually use the veterans as experimental guinea pigs and then kill them as fast as possible, because there's over 2 million veterans in this country. And just like the traitors in the District of Criminals have basically stolen the entire Medicare Trust Fund, I mean, that was the whole basis of Ross Perot's election campaign way back when, and that's why they had to shut him up. And so what they're doing now is basically euthanizing people. The elderly are being killed to get them off the dole, and it's the same thing with the veterans. They don't want them to survive. So they use them as experimental lab rats, and then they do whatever they can do, you know, between giving them cocktails of drugs, vaccinations, drug cocktails, mismatched blood transfusions. I've seen how it works. So that's any veteran that goes to the veterans hospital, of course, the reason they do this is because they say, well, you know, this is my benefit. You know, all of your benefits are actually the opposite. They're anti-benefits. And that's one thing I want people to realize. You really got my attention when you said that you worked in the blood bank for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you can give us any insights into that experience, because one thing that I realized, first of all, these people are like vampires, you know, collecting people's blood, because, of course, blood transfusions is one of the most dangerous things that people can receive, and especially what happens in the ICU, because I rotated through the surgical ICU many times, and status quo, the way things work, is that they draw people's labs every single day. So what happens when you draw people's labs every single day? Why, of course, their hematocrit plummets. And then when it gets to a certain point, it's time to give a blood transfusion. And even though they type and cross the blood, of course, there's no way that you can make sure, unless you have an identical twin, you know, you're not going to have no reaction to the blood transfusion. You're going to get antibodies produced against proteins in the blood, and the more transfusions you get, the more those antibodies are going to attack your red cells, and eventually it becomes a self-fulfilling devastation where the more transfusions you get, the more your blood count goes down, and eventually you're just going to have, you know, hemolization, which is basically destruction of the red blood cells, and not to mention a possible acute transfusion reaction, which is, you know, consistent with death, which I've seen many times. And another thing I just want to mention before I ask you to comment on this blood bank garbage that the Red Cross is behind. I actually, when I lived in Florida a few years ago, there was one of the
virus database has been updated.
I don't know what's going on here.
I'm still here.
Okay. when I lived in Florida, they had one of those blood mobiles sitting on some parking lot someplace. And so I went into the blood mobile, and I asked him if I could see, you know, the documents that they give to people when they go to, you know, donate blood, because I wanted to have an opportunity to read them before I would agree to donate my blood. And it was very interesting what happened, because I tried to leave the van with those documents. They came chasing after me. They said, "You're not allowed to leave with those documents." I said, "Well, I'm going to go out in my car and read these documents more fully. I want to make sure I know what I'm agreeing to." Of course, I had no intention to give my blood. You know, I was basically an investigative reporter finding evidence. And they would not let me leave with that document, which is kind of disturbing. But what I did read in the document is that they can use your blood for any purpose. And one thing you know they're doing is determining your DNA. They're actually using all of these tests to give individual samples of DNA to the powers that be, which they're also now doing in hospitals. Every newborn that's born in a hospital, a DNA sample is sent to wherever. So I just wanted to ask you if you could comment on your blood bank experience and let us know anything interesting that you may have seen in the blood bank.
I was always in trouble, for one thing. I worked there for 5 years, and I was eventually delegated to the back room, and without anybody. And I did have a radio at the time, and then eventually they took my radio away. and I was doing the research on the blood samples. And there was a lot of blood samples that were spun down, the serum or the cells, and then we froze them in nitrogen and labeled them. And I didn't know exactly at the time. I still thought the system was a good system.
Mm-hmm.
But I did wonder what they did with all the blood that was outdated, that you couldn't give to a human being. And I did wonder how much money they made by taking that blood and selling it probably to research institutions. I still wonder that, you know, what do you do with the blood that is not used for human consumption?
Well, what kind of research were you doing that you were aware of? Because you always know there's a nefarious aspect to it. Because just like you, I worked in a lab before medical school, and that's when I found out that if a patient sample is sent in, if the tube falls on the floor and shatters into 100 pieces, nobody calls the patient or the doctor and says, we need a new sample. They just stick somebody else's sample into the machine. So that was a very important thing for me to see before I, you know, became a medical doctor. So I now know what's really going on. But what kind of tests were you knowingly doing? What did they let you know that you were doing in terms of experiments?
Well, the individuals who receive a lot of transfusions on a regular basis, so all the hemophiliacs and the leukemics, and sometimes even the women who have given birth but have hemorrhaged,
mm-hmm.
They start making antibodies, like you said, very, very quickly to all different characters within the blood. And then they'll get a transfusion reaction very easily. So most of the research that I did was very specific about trying to find blood for these particular individuals who had antibodies to just about everything.
Right.
And so it was finding out what the antibodies were and making more serum that was specifically labeled to identify certain antibodies. They didn't tell us everything that it was being used for, okay? And I knew that they weren't telling us the whole story about stuff. And so I would ask them certain questions point blank, and they would just get angry. The thing about the blood bank there, I don't know if it's this way everywhere, but if you make 3 mistakes, you're fired automatically. So it can be a clerical error, it can be anything. So you have to be, it's amazing that they couldn't fire me.
Well, let me just comment on that, because as soon as you say that, I start laughing to myself. Because basically, if you're a psychopath and you're doing, you know, whatever the other psychopaths want you to do, you can do anything. You can make 1,000 quote-unquote mistakes, and they won't fire you. All of these policies are designed to get rid of the people they want to get rid of. And, in fact, obviously, you know, you had a guardian angel or something, because having had a conscience, I'm sure they were just, you know, chomping at the bit to get rid of you, but they weren't able to. And I had many experiences like this myself when I was a medical student and resident, showing compassion to people, which was considered inappropriate and things like that. So they didn't tell you what you were actually doing, and this is very typical for any kind of research facility. Only the top level of the psychopaths actually know what's going on. The others below that level are, you know, basically on a need-to-know basis. They're only given a part of the information. Right. But one of the things I'm going to be doing a show on soon is this whole RH situation. RH stands for rhesus.
Right.
Rhesus is a monkey. And right. Actually, one of my listeners got me going down this path because, you know, this whole idea of RH positive or RH negative, I happen to be RH negative. So after my son was born, you know, was born, they gave me one of those Rogam shots, which I'm sure inoculated me with the rhesus crap. But whatever, you know, I've done whatever I can to detox that. But just bringing up that topic, the listener that contacted me who had been doing some research on this, and I'm thinking to myself, where did the rhesus factor come from? You know, and I'm thinking this must have been some kind of, you know, genetic, biological experimentation
right.
long ago.
Genetic experimentation from a long, long, long time ago.
Right. Creating chimeras. This must
right.
have been one of the first things that they did to create chimeras of animals and humans.
That's just one of the things that we know. There's many, many other things. The Native Americans believed that one of the reasons we don't have some of the knowledge that we used to have is because there were the intermingling between the animals and the humans, and they took advantage of this in a wrong way, and so the knowledge was taken away from them. So there's many, many stories. There's stories that between the Neanderthals, who are the Rh negative originally and had all the wisdom, and then the Cro-Magnon came, and the Cro-Magnon were the Rh positives. And
right.
the Cro-Magnon killed off almost all the Rh negatives, or the Neanderthals. And so there are very few groups of Rh negative people in the world. And so I've been studying that recently, thinking how wonderful it is. I think it's related also to something that I have written about, or the Morgellons disease, and this has come up, and it's associated to kill off or to make sick the Rh negative individuals.
Wow.
And
well, we're definitely going to have to talk more about that, because it's just amazing how many things we have in common. But I just want to state that this is something very important that people have to think about, because, in fact, isn't it true, Dr. Robbie, that you have Native American ancestry in your background?
I do.
Yes. And this is one thing I've talked about on the shows many times. It's self-evident that one of the things that the global psychopaths are trying to do is destroy ancient wisdom. In the Native American community, in the Aboriginals in Australia, in the people in Africa that they consider, you know, tribal. And, you know, these people know how to live off the land. They don't need government, okay?
Right.
And they're doing everything they can to destroy that ancient wisdom.
Right.
So I'm sure that the experiments along those lines have something to do with Rh factor as well.
It does. There's the Blackfoot is one of the Native American groups that is Rh negative.
Wait, say that again? I missed that.
The Blackfoot.
Okay. Is that the tribe you're from?
No, it's not. I'm Athabascan, which is north of there, is from Canada and Alaska.
Okay.
The Basque, from Spain is another Rh negative group. There's some Eastern European groups also that are Rh negative, and then of course Scotch Irish groups. Those who have green eyes and a really fair skin, but green eyes and red hair. But the Basque, they don't all have to have red hair, but usually green eyes, blue or green.
And one of the things I've been trying to warn any of the people, the natives people of whatever country, is that they're developing specific vaccines to target those individuals. As a matter of fact, I have a new client in British Columbia who is of native ancestry, and she told me that they came in because she lives not on a reservation per se, but, you know, there's a group of people. They're pretty much all of Native ancestry that lives in this particular area. And
mm-hmm.
they came in with a vaccine that they actually told the mothers was specifically designed for their children. And it was supposedly a vaccine for ear infections. But as soon as I heard that, I knew that it was some kind of an infertility vaccine, if not more, to actually corrupt the DNA. Because this is what they're using to target these people.
Well, the Hopi and the Navajo, who I spent quite a bit of time with, they specifically said that they came in with vaccines to make their women infertile. And there used to be millions of Native Americans all across America, but they really did try to wipe us all out. There's not very many of us left. And that's what they're doing throughout the world. Like you said, any of the indigenous people throughout the world, they're trying to wipe them out, and they're trying to wipe their abilities out. I always tell people, my husband says, no, this is you, not everybody can do what you do. I'm like, no, it's just that people forgot. They've forgotten their real abilities of how to see the world and how to communicate. They've lost this ability. And I think that I would always tell them that it can be brought back. But now, after, I don't know, quite a few, 8 years, I'm thinking maybe he's partially right that not everybody can gain those abilities back. But a lot of indigenous people throughout the world, they still understand and they communicate with that understanding because they can see things differently through their dreams, communicating through consciousness and receiving the knowledge through consciousness directly. And so you don't go to school to learn. The real knowledge is what you get through consciousness. And so that ability, which is true knowledge and true wisdom, it's not filtered through a language that every language, I believe, has some built-in untruths within it. And it's not filtered through religion. It's not filtered through technology. It's just the pure essence of itself.
Exactly. And one of the things I hope you will continue to do, especially because you have that bloodline connection with these people, is to educate them that they have to get away from their quote-unquote free clinics and their government benefits because they are intentionally destroying the ability to have that connection, which these ancient peoples have had for, you know, eons. And not to mention the fact that, especially here in the States, one of the things they've done to corrupt the Native Americans is bring casinos into play. I tried for years to find some tribe who had their supposedly sovereign land. It was my, you know, dream to have a clinic and to bring together healers of all types to actually help people, you know, learn how to heal themselves with natural therapies. But unfortunately, at least here in the States, most of the high-level people in these tribes have totally sold out their own people, and they're more interested in building casinos and making themselves rich, which, of course, is bringing all kinds of problems, you know, gambling addictions, alcoholism, you know, you name it. It's just been a scourge on these people, but that's what's being done.
Well, the only tribe that you can really go with right now are the ones in South Dakota, the Lakota, who have not succumbed to the casino epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And the government continues to keep them below poverty level so that they can't really rise up. And so I try to help them out each year with blankets and coats and different things just to stay warm, and you can help the elderly by buying them fuel to heat their trailers or to help rebuild a siding on their trailers or their dwelling. For gas money to get to a doctor. Unfortunately, the Indian Health Service is in control of their health, and it's like 19th century medicine. It's about the same as the VA, but it's still an experimental. They use them as experimental guinea pigs.
Right, so why would they want to go to the doctor? I mean, they should be going to the elders to learn the ancient wisdom. And I just have to say, I was not aware that they were the only ones. I did shows a couple of years ago with some of the Lakota elders, and what's happened with them is that they've been hoodwinked. There's an individual that has come into their mix that I was actually contacted. He wanted me to do a show to raise money for him because he was allegedly going to file court papers so that the Lakota could get, you know, money that they were due from the federal government, because the treaties that were signed were totally not honored, and, you know, the federal government, just like they stole the Medicare Trust Fund, they stole all the money from the funds that had been created for the Indians. And they were hoodwinked by this guy and led to believe that, you know, the answer was in the courts. And, of course, the courts are totally corrupt. Mm-hmm. So there's many layers of control, and that's very unfortunate.
Well, it has to be a person that gradually gains trust of them, their trust, and then you have to literally go in and teach them over and over again, and then help them gain their own juicers, you know, because they're expensive. These people are living literally below poverty level, and it's extremely difficult. Things are, I think, are going to change, I hope. But we need, they are subsidized in their little markets that they have. This is what I saw on the Navajo reservation. They're subsidized with the worst food that the government has.
Exactly.
And they're eating it. And I tried to tell them, well, diabetes would be completely wiped out if you didn't have all the horrible flours they give you, the flour, the potatoes, all of the garbage that the government gives them is causing their state of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
You and I know that, or I know for a fact, I've taken juvenile diabetics who have been on insulin for at least 10 years and had them after a week off their insulin, just with supplements and with their diet. And then their retinopathy reversed very, very quickly within 2 weeks. Their feeling in the tips of their fingers and their toes came back. And it's all just with high-end nutrition.
Well, I have to say, vaccines cause insulin-dependent diabetes. You get an autoimmune attack on the beta cells in the pancreas. So when I have clients with insulin-dependent diabetes, I also include a vaccine detox. But I want to just mention, because this is very important for people to realize, the reason they're so free with the insulin is because when you take exogenous insulin, that's insulin from the outside, that causes a negative feedback effect on the endocrine organ. Same thing happens in the thyroid gland. And if you do it long enough, that's actually going to shut down your own organ. And eventually, you will become a lifelong customer of Big Pharma.
Right.
I'm so glad that you're educating these people to make them realize that they cannot trust the government clinics, because the government clinics are there to destroy them.
I tried to get a job at the Phoenix Medical Center, the Indian Phoenix Medical Center, for 5 years. I put my application in every year. After a while, they just look at me and say, oh, hi. Hi, how are you? Glad to see you again. Because a Native American is supposed to be the first person up for a job position that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
They turn me down every single time because they know what I was doing at the Phoenix Indian Medical Center. They have people from NIH doing experimentation on the diabetes from the Pima Indians, their pet group, genetic group, saying that it's genetic, saying this, saying that, you know, and it's not necessarily true. I said, hey, you know, we can reverse this in the whole community. You don't have to keep them diabetic. Don't you understand? So they hated me. Some of the Indians wanted me to be one of the head doctors there. But when you go there, there aren't any Native American doctors. They're all government doctors.
Right, medical masons, right.
There's no indigenous doctors there. And they don't want an indigenous doctor to be there. So I was turned down year after year after year. Even some of the other doctors, they wanted me to be in there, but the administrative people, they refused to let me come near their patient population. So,
did they ever give you a reason for that? Since there was this policy of putting the Native American doctors on the top of the list?
No. They never, ever did. I could never get any answer from any of them. But it's amazing how the system tries to shove out, keep out the truth, and it does it. It really, really keeps out the truth. So anybody who comes up with the truth about what's going on in any part of medicine, they're going to be shut down.
Exactly.
They're going to be attacked. And so I was attacked. And
I want to get into that story, but I just have one other question to ask you from what you talked about so far. And then I want to get into how they took away your license, because, of course, that's always, you know, the final action that makes it impossible for people like us to work within the system, because they don't want people like us in the system. They look for the people who are willing to cross the line. And I saw this so often in surgery, you know, the doctors who didn't give a crap about the patients, who would go on rounds and talk about how the incision looked and all this stuff, and those of us lower down on the food chain will be looking at each other knowing that the chief resident never made rounds. He had no clue what the incision looked like. He was either on the in-call room or possibly had even left the hospital. They would make stuff up, and those are the people they look for, because those are the ones they want in charge, because those are the ones who don't care about patients. And to work in modern day medicine, those are the people that fit into the overall big picture. But
yeah.
I just wanted to ask you, you really got my attention when you said you got your medical degree at a Masonic temple. Because, you know, that whole movie Anatomy 2, and like I said, after the show, I'm going to check Netflix and see what the heck's going on there. Because that movie, Anatomy, and then the number 2,
mm-hmm.
It's out of Germany, so it's got English subtitles, but that movie is the best movie I've ever seen, exposing the anti-Hippocratics. That's what the medical Masons actually call themselves. And the only untruth in the movie is at the end, you know, the police ride up on their white horses and they arrest the bad guys. Well, in reality, the high-level police are Masons, too, and Masons protect Masons. But I find that very curious when you say you got your medical degree at a Masonic temple. Was that where the graduation ceremony took place? Go ahead. Please tell us about that.
That's where the graduation ceremony took place, which I was like, wow, what is this? It was a huge temple in the middle of Chicago, around the Gold Coast. Great big Masonic temple. And I kept on wondering all those years, why are we graduating in a Masonic temple? I don't get this. You know, and that there were Masons there. There were the 32nd degreeers. The Shriners were there to welcome us. And it was just kind of strange. Now, after years have gone by, I understand what it is to be in the Brotherhood. You know, that you protect one another.
Right.
You protect the hospital. You protect the system. You don't really protect the truth. I didn't understand that. Even after I was being attacked, I really didn't understand, because then I was really coming out with the truth. And then I was being attacked even more. Hopi Medicine Man, I went to him and said, I don't think people understand what I'm saying. I think I have a problem with communication. I said, can you heal me of this? Because I'm trying to communicate with the medical board. I'm trying to communicate with the residency, with the hospital, with other doctors. And people look at me like they don't understand a word I am saying. Or they're shocked. He said, well, that's, you know, he says, you can't see behind you, but your spirit is so huge, so gigantic that they are afraid of you. They are so deathly afraid of you. And what does an animal do when they're afraid? I said to him, I said, they attack. They attack you. He says, exactly. They're attacking you. He says, if they want a piece of paper from you, because that's all it is a piece of paper. It's nothing more than a piece of paper. Give it to them. Because the Creator, because God, whatever God has given you, you will still carry with you throughout your life. Unless you do something and God decides to take it back. But that will be with you. Forever and ever. He said, the other stuff is not real. It's fake. What's real is something that you can't see, but you know that it's there because you feel it in your heart and you live it. You live it day in and day out. That's the truth. That's the wisdom. He says, you'll always have that.
Okay. All right, I just have to ask a couple questions, and I want to make sure we leave time to tell your story about how they took your license. I find that extremely interesting that they held the ceremony for you to get your, you know, medical degree in a Masonic temple.
Mm-hmm.
That is so obvious, okay?
Yeah.
actually, I went to medical school at SUNY Downstate in Brooklyn, and our ceremony was held at the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. And I thought that was obvious, you know, the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. So in other words, when we all raised our hand and took the Hippocratic Oath, we were just performing.
You're performing.
But your experience is even more obvious. And I also have to say that in 2008, I was invited to Iowa to speak at the Palmer Chiropractic College. B.J. Palmer, being the founder of chiropractic, as a matter of fact, he calls MDs medical devils. And I'm going to be discussing that in my book, What Happened, you know, How Did the Hippocratic Oath Become the Hypocritical? But interestingly, the same thing happens there. As a matter of fact, there was a Masonic temple very near the campus of the Palmer Chiropractic College, and they actually transformed the Masonic temple into a place where they had different functions, including graduation, but they also gave classes there. And just walking in the place, of course, they had to, you know, put windows in the place because Masonic temples don't have windows. But just walking in there, you could feel the vibrations. Who knows how many sacrifices happened there and what other evil deeds took place. But it was just an overwhelming feeling of evil and darkness that permeated the place. And I was taken there off hours by the person that invited me there. I have all kinds of photographs of that place. It is chilling. But now you're telling me that a medical school has their graduation ceremony there as well. See, they're right in their face.
It was very dark and oppressive, the ceremony itself. You know, it was just very dark. There weren't any windows, and it was extremely, you know, like ritualistic, the way we go and pick up our diploma, and we wear the mortar hat, and it's all symbolic. Every single piece of the uniform that you put on is all symbolic for this Masonic oath that you don't even know that you're taking. You think that you're graduating medical school, but you're actually making an oath to this secret organization to abide by what they do for the rest of your life. And I didn't even know that that's what I was doing. It wasn't until probably 8 years later that I started realizing things about the Masons and about the system. And I did realize things about the system when I was in surgery, and I wasn't allowed to continue surgery. I'm kind of soft-spoken. Somebody said that I was slow. So one of the surgeons at one of the rotating hospitals had me do a hernia operation. And it was my first year. And so I said, okay, great. I'm going to do a hernia. And he's going to let me use a scalpel. This is fantastic. And so afterwards, after the procedure, he says, I have to tell you something. I said, okay. He says, that was the best surgery I've ever seen somebody do, better than a fifth year. And they were saying that you're a slow person. He says, and I thought that at first because every movement that you make is meticulous. So it looks like it's slow, but in actuality, you finish the surgery far faster than anybody else. I just need to tell you that. He says, you're one of the best surgeons I have ever met. And don't let any of these people pull you down or make you feel bad about who you are because they don't understand who you are. I said, I know. And I said, thank you for telling me all this. I'll remember it for the rest of my life, the compliments that you've given me. I said, thank you. But it was very hard going from surgery to internal medicine at first. It was just, of course, a big disappointment. And being in surgery, you go through a rigorous training that is far above all other training, I think.
Yeah, and total sleep deprivation. I just want to say, basically with you, they used an excuse that you were slow. Obviously, you had encountered a surgeon with a conscience. They do sneak in there. the reason I became a surgeon in the first place was because, first of all, I had a perforated Meckel's diverticulum when I was 10, and I almost died, and a surgeon saved my life. So that made a very lasting impression on me, and that's kind of like a burst appendix. I'll just tell the listeners who won't have a clue what that is. But it's the same symptoms as a burst appendix. The pus goes into your abdomen, and it's very serious. And when I was in medical school, I happened to run across a couple of surgeons on my rotations who actually complimented me on my compassion. And that's how I was hoodwinked. And I thought, oh, I can treat others the way I would want to be treated, and that will be okay. But as soon as I became a surgeon, they did everything they could to try to take away my humanity. And I'm going to write some of these experiences into my book, but the one that stands out the most to me was there was a man who was in the ICU who was extremely ill. He was dead, but he didn't know it, basically, you know, on dopamine, IV drips and all kinds of stuff. And he had gangrene of his leg. And in order to, you know, just eke out another surgical charge that they could make to his insurance or whatever, they decided they were going to do an amputation of this man. But he was so hemodynamically unstable that they couldn't put him to sleep. So I had to saw through his sciatic nerve without anesthesia. I will never forget the scream that came out of this man who was pretty much out of it. But, you know, when you saw through the sciatic nerve, I can't even imagine the pain that that must be. And they forced me to do that. And I had tears streaming down my face. And, of course, he made it back to the ICU. I think he lived 2 hours and then he died. But they got that last surgical procedure out of him. But there were many things that they did to me to try to take my conscience away from me. And looking back on it, I now see that. Unfortunately, they're successful in many surgeons. And that's why, as far as I'm concerned, of all the medical specialties, surgery has the most psychopaths.
It does. But you have to admit that some of the training is above and beyond when I went into internal medicine, I, of course, carried over some of the training, which was a lot about being meticulous and setting everything up, making sure that you weren't going to have any complications ever. And so I was very meticulous about my tubes, changing my tubes every few days so that they didn't get infected. I was really meticulous that the internal medicine people thought that I was out of my mind, and some of the fluid balances that I would use, like in pancreatitis, which are, as you know, huge, huge amounts of fluids being used, they would be accusing me of trying to cause a person a cardiac arrest. When in actuality, I was just trying to save their life. But there's differences between the two fields. And I got kind of hardened by them having me leave surgery. So I was kind of hardened by that aspect. And so when I was in internal medicine, especially in my third year, I would yell at my attendings. I would just literally yell at them to protect my patients from them wanting to kill them. And I didn't stand for people trying to tell me lies anymore. I just was very adamant about things. I suppose that put me on the bad list because I didn't go along with everybody's program. It's not that I had any mortality or any casualties because of what I had done. It's just that they weren't able to do things the way they wanted things done. But my patients actually got well, and I didn't have any complications at all.
Which is amazing, considering the fact that everything that internal medicine does is toxic. I mean, fluid restoration, that's one thing that can be helpful to people, although now IV solutions have been so contaminated with glass shards and all kinds of other things. I mean, it's getting worse all the time, but all the drugs they use are toxic. And so, go ahead.
I used, I made up my own food bags, IV food bags. I would calculate them myself, whereas usually they have a dietitian calculate them or somebody else. And so I would always add extra vitamins or extra vitamin C or three more vials of vitamin C into each bag. So I had already started seeing huge differences in people just by doing the things the way I did them, which nobody else would do.
Giving the body what it needs. I mean, and of course, IV, that's even more important. One of the things that always cracked me up in the hospital was these alleged dietitians, a total fraud. You know, they're feeding people red Jell-O versus green Jell-O and all the other garbage that they feed them, not even giving them organic nutrients that can sustain their bodies. But, of course, when you're doing it IV, that's even more important, because the reason these people need it IV is because they're in such serious straits in terms of whatever condition they have. I can just imagine the blowback that you experienced from trying to do that.
I certainly did. I've got questioned about everything all the time, constantly questioned. But after a while, when they questioned me, it was them actually asking me, why are you doing this? How do you know how to do this? How did you figure this out? You know, because I started to become the expert at this. And nobody else knew or saw what I had seen. And even if I tried to explain to them what I was talking about on an EKG, for instance, or on a chest x-ray, or, you know, and bringing out my measuring device and measuring things and telling them, you know, this is what we're looking at. And they'd still look at me baffled. And I'd tell them, you know, why I gauged the balloon pump by the diastolic. I went by the diastolic and then measured the systolic after that, and then all the drugs, the dopamine and the epinephrine and all the other drugs being put in would be measured after that. But, you know, they'd ask me these questions, ask me why, how do you know how to do this? Because I literally wasn't taught by anybody. You're just kind of thrown in there to do stuff.
You figured it out for yourself using common sense and logic. Like I did. So actually, it's very interesting. They did have some kind of curiosity about this, and I would suspect it was for their own ends, so that they would possibly know what to do if their loved one was in a situation. But in terms of doing the right thing for others, they must have realized that that would not be allowed. They were just inquiring for their own benefit, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Still, their egos refused to allow them to admit that you knew something they didn't, because
right.
The ego is a disease in medicine.
Right. And I never looked down upon anybody who asked me questions. I always welcomed. I always made a point of being the question master all my life, being a person with dyslexia and not really being able to read correctly until I was in residency, I ask so many questions that people will get sick of me asking questions because sometimes they wouldn't be able to answer the questions that I asked.
Oh, they don't like that. Yeah.
But that's, you know, I tell my children, I say, there's never a question that is unnecessary. If you have a question, ask the questions. Don't be afraid to ask. Always ask. I tell my patients, I said, if you have a question, please ask it. And it's coming from you. It needs to be said. Ask questions. Don't hide behind thinking that I know everything because you know yourself better than I do. So you need to ask questions. I ask everybody. Do your own research.
Right. And let me just interject that this is why doctors today are so threatened by patients. Because patients now have the internet and they can check things out for themselves. And it's truly amazing the stories that I hear from people that call me. Doctors are so threatened now by people that ask hard questions. They don't want to be asked the hard questions because if they don't know the answer, they don't have the humility to say, you know what, that's a very good question. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to check it out and I'll get back to you. Instead of that, they will basically condemn or, you know, downplay the question and pretend it's a stupid question and not honor the patient. And another thing I just want to bring up, as I'm sure that you, like me, spent many hours with people. That's one of the things that has been totally taken out of healthcare at this point. It's all about technology. Okay, you come in with a certain label. This is your diagnosis. These are the tests to order. These are the drugs to give. Nobody sits down with a patient and asks them, what's your home situation? How much stress do you have? What toxins have you been exposed to, et cetera, et cetera? Because with the insurance situation, just to be able to, you know, see enough patients that you can make enough money to pay your staff to fill out the forms, you know, you have to see 15, 20 patients an hour. And that is one of the major ways they've destroyed medicine is by making that time constraint where people can't ask questions because the doctor is sitting there looking at his watch.
Right. Right. It's part of the system. That's one of the blatant signs of a poor system when somebody can't ask a question and won't be answered. I mean, it's... you know that your clinic isn't working or your doctor isn't there on your behalf when something like that happens. And so you have to change it. It's up to the patients to change that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We can be guides to how they can go about doing it, but they need to be the ones writing the letters to their insurance company saying, this isn't working out. This is how come it's not working out, and you need to make a change in this system.
Well, that's one thing I'll have to disagree with you on. I don't see any point in writing letters. What I tell people what I would do if I was them is just get rid of your insurance. I haven't had insurance for 15 years. I have spent all this time learning myself about natural therapies to reverse all conditions. I do have good insurance on my car. If I get in a car accident, my insurance will cover my injury, although I'm sure I'll be murdered as soon as I get in the hospital because there will be some national security letter sitting there telling them to get rid of me. But basically, my goal is to cause the death of medicine. People have to fire their doctors. You won't answer my questions. You won't respect me when I come in here. For example, I have a document on my reversing vaccine-induced diseases .com website under the vid section called Physician's Warranty of Vaccine Safety. I encourage all parents especially to download that 4-page document, bring that into your pediatrician. It basically says, okay, this is all the crap in vaccines. You know the side effects to all this crap. You are guaranteeing me that my child will not have a problem from this vaccine. Of course, no pediatrician will ever sign it. I've heard so many funny stories. The doctor runs to the bathroom, or they fire the patient, or whatever the case may be. If they can't address the side effects of what they're doing, why do you need insurance? Get rid of the insurance. Instead of spending $20,000, $25,000 a year on insurance, put that money into an account for yourself. Find somebody that can teach you natural solutions. Learn for yourself the poisons that our fraudulent drug administration and EPA, et cetera, are allowing us to be poisoned with, and avoid those things. You know, it's all about prevention. If you prevent the problem, you're not going to have the problem. Unfortunately, the District of Criminals is constantly allowing us to be poisoned in so many ways. And that's the reason. As a matter of fact, all these different walks for the breast cancer, you know, Susan G. Coleman.
Ridiculous.
It's a joke. As a matter of fact, I went
to
one of my local, they have like this Oktoberfest thing here where I live. I went there just to scope out what was going on last year. And they had a booth for Susan G. Komen. So I walked up to one of the women and I said, I just want to ask you a question. Since it's a known fact that breast cancer is caused by a virus, and I know this because I have documents from the Special Virus Cancer Program, they made the virus that causes breast cancer, not to mention the fact that pesticides are highly involved in breast cancer as well as prostate cancer. And I started talking about a bunch of things, and I asked this woman, how come you're raising money for people to get mammograms when mammograms cause breast cancer? Why aren't you addressing the cause of the breast cancer? And she just looked at me and said, well, everything causes cancer. That was her answer. So basically, it's like, well, this is how we make money. You know, Susan G. Komen, we need to get a six-figure salary for all the CEOs of this organization. You know, that's what they're all about. It's such a scam. But yet so many people buy into this. It's disgusting.
They do. The system is so tight and locked in. I have tried to tell people, don't spend your money on insurance. They look at me and get so afraid that they just can't let go of their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
They know that I'm right, but they just go into this spiral pathway towards fear, and they cannot do that. I mean, I don't have insurance. I have been practicing natural medicine since 1994, and I just go around the country and instruct people what they can do in different situations with their life and what books they can read and what websites they can go to get the information. Most people are followers, though, and so they need to have their leaders. And the only leaders that we have are people like you and me who are doctors who have been through the matrix and come out, you know, being outside of the box people. We're the leaders. And some of them, they don't really want to come out of the box, even though they know that it's true. They're afraid they're not going to be able to pay their mortgage. They're not going to be able to pay their son's schooling, or for their Mercedes, or, you know, the certain lifestyle that they have become accustomed to would just vanish.
Right. They're willing to sacrifice their health. I hear this all the time. Mothers will call me and say, well, if I don't vaccinate my child, they can't go to school. And then I say, well, why do you want them to go to school in the first place, to learn to put a condom on a banana? But, you know, it's just that whole fear thing. They don't want to basically rock the boat. They're willing to sacrifice their child's health and or life just to, you know, basically continue on and to do things as they're doing, because it's easier to do nothing. and I am so disgusted with that attitude. But those people will be killed off. When Obamacare kicks in, because I don't believe that the Supreme Court is going to reverse it, I think this is just another dog and pony show. But I know that Obamacare is not only going to force people to get insurance, of course, I never will. I'll pay the fee, the tax, whatever it is. There's no way in hell they're going to make me get insurance. People that do will be forced to get the vaccines, get the mammograms, get the colonoscopies. They will be forced to do whatever they're told to do, or they will be threatened to lose their insurance. So this is going to be another layer of control that they will use to kill off the population.
You know, I think my mother, her breast cancer was caused by a mammogram. She went for an exam, and she was breast cancer-free, no problems whatsoever. Then they told her, okay, we're going to set you up for a mammogram. And lo and behold, 6 months later, she had breast cancer after the mammogram. And I know it was because of the mammogram, the radiation.
Right.
And
the pesticides, it's always the big picture. But it's been a proven thing that radiation causes cancer. And one of the sassy things that I tell people now, because I get calls from people that are just curious, but they're still in that medical mafia mindset. And if they tell me they've been recommended to get radiation for their cancer, I tell them, well, why don't you just take a trip to Fukushima? On a little visit to Japan for a couple weeks. You'll get all the radiation you could possibly want, and, then you don't have to pay for radiation treatments. Because I'm trying to get them to start thinking about these things. If the danger of Fukushima in Japan is that so many people are going to get cancer, then why are you allowing yourself to be radiated to find cancer, and then once they find the cancer, to be radiated to allegedly get rid of it? It's insane.
And why not take things orally on a regular basis to get rid of the radiation within our bodies? I mean, people are going to have to do that now anyway, because the radiation from Fukushima is now here in America. The rate of infant mortality has gone up 37% since Fukushima.
Dr. Robbie, wait a minute. How could they do that? How could they knowingly go and get radiation treatments for cancer and then take anything? Because there's homeopathic remedies to detox radiation. There's many ways to do things naturally. But you see, they would have to make an admission to themselves that they've been lied to in order to do that. And that's the one good thing that's come out of Fukushima, is that I'm hoping that some people will start to, you know, roll that over in their few working neurons in their brain and start to ask themselves, how does this work? You know, how come they're telling us radiation is a good thing? CAT scans. If you get a CAT scan, it's equivalent to 800 chest x-rays. This has been published in the mainstream media. Yes, yeah, sign me up. Doctor, don't talk to me. Don't spend time with me to ask me about what's going on. Just send me off for a CAT scan. And, oh, by the way, make sure you give me a squirt of that contrast media, which will destroy my kidneys and put me into renal failure. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah. Now they have it so that you can just go get, even if you're not sick or anything, you can go get a CAT scan.
Right.
A whole body scan is what they're calling them.
Lovely.
You know? Catch your disease before it's even there.
Or create it.
Yeah.
Okay.
People today, they can take kelp, they can take blue-green algae, they can take chlorella, and they can take something called zeolite, which in liquid drops that helps bind the radiation particles and so it can be expelled. These are the things people can do on a daily basis to prevent them from getting radiation poisoning today.
Okay, I just have to comment on that. The main producer of zeolite, they now have aluminum in the zeolite.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I just have to chime in on that. I would not recommend anybody take zeolite unless they make sure that the zeolite does not have aluminum in it, because
okay,
aluminum and mercury causes Alzheimer's disease. Also, in terms of the algae and the kelp and stuff, of course, the problem is that the seawater has been massively contaminated by the radiation as well. And that's going to cause mutation of these plant species. So, you know, they're ruining everything. I mean, that's my main message to the people, that the psychopaths that control the world are destroying everything. Mm-hmm. There's natural solutions. The natural solutions are being corrupted. Big pharma's buying out a lot of supplement companies. Of course, we have our district of criminals passing codex and trying to take away our ability to get supplements. So, you know, what I tell people is, if you don't have your health, you have nothing. And so you better rise up and start saying no to some of these policies, because you are going to die. Your loved ones are going to die. They're trying to decrease 90% of the population under Agenda 21. I mean, it's written right in the document. So, you know, people have to get rid of their fear and wake up and smell the coffee.
Most people don't know what Agenda 21 is. And so they can go to Agenda 21 for Dummies on YouTube to start out with. And it gives you a great overview. It gives you the key terminology words that they're using that are attached to Agenda 21, like biosphere, environmental protective agencies, all of these things. But the main thing about Agenda 21, which is a Masonic deal also, I'm sure, is to kill off about 5 billion people out of the world. And that's one of the reasons I think Bill Gates and Monsanto have the seed bank in Norway to restart everything, because they know by the chemtrails, by the radiation, by Monsanto polluting, genetically polluting the food source, that they're going to be, they're causing disease, and they're causing early death in people. They're causing infertility also, and their main goal is to get rid of billions of people. And people have to educate themselves and stand up for themselves to start protecting their own life and the lives of their children.
Yes. Yeah, they have to face
take responsibility.
They have to face their fear and face reality. I have a very important cartoon that I always have next to me in my office. It's a Gary Larson cartoon. It's a mother tucking her son in at night and reassuring him there are no such thing as monsters. And then you can see a huge monster peeking out from under the bed. Okay, there are monsters, people, and we have to face them. Okay, we're running out of time so fast. I want to get to why they took away your medical license, but before we do, I just have to ask you one thing, because this is a problem that I have, this whole man in the sky thing. You mentioned that whatever God has given will be taken away. This God creature that created evil, according to Isaiah 45:5-7, and is allowing what's happening to happen, how come he's not taking away anything from the psychopaths?
I think that things are going to change fairly quickly, and it's not really about G-O-D. It's not about God. It's about what is actually happening. It's not the man in the sky. It has to do with energy and light and truth. And things are changing very quickly. They're going to be changing very quickly this year. with all of the energy coming from the center of the universe is making its way here, which it does every 26,000 some years. This switchover takes place. And so we have that to look forward to. The bad guys, so to speak, are actually, they're getting sort of worse because they're so fearful, because they've been exposed to such an extent that they're losing their battle. There are more of us standing up and speaking out and trying to reach out to other people, trying to make people less dependent, for one thing, on the system, and becoming independent. So the more things that detach you from the system and you start creating for yourself, you're going to be independent and free of the system. And there's more and more and more people doing that throughout the world.
Because the system is controlled by psychopaths. And I just want to say, I totally agree with everything you're saying, and that's why I'm glad that you,
We have to work together, though.
Right.
We have
but I just want to say, I'm very glad that you went farther on that, because this whole G.O.D. thing, that's what's keeping people on the couch. They're waiting for some man in the sky to save them. And I know there's a power of good. I've had, although I've been through tremendous persecution and unbelievable suffering, I have had many miracles happen in my life. I've been brought together with many people, including you and your husband, J.B. Campbell. And I'm finding the ones who are standing up. So I know that there's a power of good. I don't call it God. But it is definitely an energy, the energy of truth. And that's what we have to tap into. And that's why I always tell people, don't believe anything I say. Check it out for yourself. If you can detoxify yourself and get your brain to work properly, you can hook into this energy. And that's the amazing thing. Just like the native peoples have always been able to do, and that's why they're being attacked. Because the minions, the psychopaths that are trying to bring about this global New World Order situation, they know who their enemies are. And it is the people that can tap into the truth, that energy of truth.
It's about unplugging yourself from football games and basketball games and unplugging yourself from the television and actually doing things that are real and not having your children playing video games day and night and actually doing activities that are beneficial for all of us. That's what it's going to take, is unplugging from the system.
Yes.
And what everybody can do, because it's springtime, a little more springtime in some places than others, I can't plant until the beginning of June, because we'll still get freezing and snow until then. But in a lot of places, you can start, each family can start building their own garden and learning about the vegetables that they are growing and that they're eating and how they're benefiting their whole family by growing their own food with good water and good nutrients rather than depending on the grocery stores to supply you with ready-made foods. One thing everybody could do to set them free, that would be a start. That would be a big start. And then to start learning about alternatives to antibiotics, alternatives, ways of healing, and then actually start living it and practicing it.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. How I learned to do what I do is one day at a time. So each day I learned something new, and I added that on each and every day. I didn't skip a day. There weren't any skipping of Saturdays and Sundays. I learned something each and every single day, and so now I'm an expert at what I do. That doesn't mean that I stopped either. I continue to learn something new each and every day. And that just takes a little bit of your time and space. And then communicating that with another person, at least one other person, if not more. And so if everybody would do that, it would snowball into something really, really great.
Right. And that's what I'm trying to encourage as well. And that's why I always tell people, you have to research all the different poisons you're being exposed to. Also, that's very important, and avoid them like the plague. Aspartame, fluoride, pesticides, the list is endless. It's not just a matter of growing your own food, which, of course, the chemtrails are influencing that. Here in North Carolina, where I live, it's already up to 80 degrees, actually 90 degrees in March. I predict by June we'll be frying because we have the heart machine and all the other things they're doing to control the weather. So, yes, learning how to grow your own food is great, but you also have to learn how to avoid the toxins. That's mm-hmm. very important. Okay, I can't believe how fast this show is going. We only have 15 minutes left. I wanted to give you time to talk about how did they ultimately take away your medical license, because this is really disgusting.
Well, they didn't really take it away. At the end, I gave it up. But what they did in the beginning, and I fought for my license very hard, there's a lot of drug abuse within the medical system, and I was going out with a colleague, a fellow doctor, who I thought was doing methamphetamines, but as it turns out, he was doing a lot of other drugs too, and I tried to help him, and they came down on me like a ton of bricks. They put him in drug rehab, and he was in 2 1-month rehabs, and then he was in for a year rehab, and then he was back in for a month or two after that rehab. But the hospital allowed him to come back, and I couldn't understand, because I wasn't the one who was the drug addict. And they have a whole system to hush-hush doctors who are on drugs, so they had a whole bunch of them being treated at this residency program for drug addiction.
Right, and let me just mention that anesthesia is the specialty that attracts the largest proportion of the drug addicts. As a matter of fact, when I was doing my residency, there was an anesthesia resident who went into a stall in the bathroom and was shooting up with fentanyl and actually killed himself. So this is a very common problem that doctors who want to abuse drugs go into medicine, because then they can get whatever they want. So go ahead.
Well, these doctors were cardiologists, internal medicine, pediatrics, surgery. So it was the whole gamut. Okay?
Oh, yeah, it's the whole gamut, yeah.
It's the whole gamut. So none of them are exempt from it. But it's all secret, so people don't really know that your doctor was a drug addict. You can't find that anywhere. So, I mean, I was kind of naive at the time, and I always tell the truth about stuff. And I was one of the best residents that they had. I was at the top of the ladder. And for some reason, and I didn't figure it out for 3 years, why they were ostracizing me. And I think it was because I would always tell the truth. But I met this lady at a nutrition and her friend at a nutrition conference 3 years later, and my case was kind of in limbo, and I wasn't supposed to be practicing medicine unless I was being supervised by another doctor, and then I was, of course, shunned by all the other doctors. So it was kind of a catch-22, so I was seeing people underneath the table, so to speak, underground. But I met this lady at the nutrition conference, and she told me, she says, I'm going to tell you a story about your mentor, who is an intensive care mentor, who I really did look up to. She said, I'm going to tell you this story because I went out with him. And he was late for our date. He would always be late. And then we would go, he would speed around like a madman. And then we'd go to a bar or somewhere to sit down. But he would ask me for quarters, and he would be on the telephone and gone to the bathroom the whole time. And he'd come back very agitated. She said, does that sound familiar? I said, oh, my God, my mentor was doing methamphetamines. She says, yeah. So what we pieced together happened was that my mentor, because he was at the top of the totem pole in the intensive care unit, he thought that I knew that he had been doing drugs, that my friend had told him that, and that I would spill all the beans and everything would come tumbling down. And right. So the best thing to do was just to get rid of me.
Right.
And so they did it by avoidance, by making everything in limbo. I finally got my license back because I met a businessman. At first, nobody believed my story. Nobody would believe me for years. And finally, I met this businessman, and he said, he started asking me things about how the world works and the universe and stuff, and didn't even ask me about the medical school stuff. He just asked me this other stuff. And he said, okay, I'm going to help you. After 2 hours, he says, I'm going to help you. So we went, he helped me go to the director of the medical board and asked for a meeting, and they didn't know I was bringing him, but he had gotten the previous medical director fired, who had put me under all this oppression. And she said, oh, don't I know you? And he said, yeah, you do. I got the previous medical director fired. And she's like, oh, come on in, you too. And so she let me talk about my case, and at the end of the month, end of the following month, I was supposed to have a date with the medical board. But I never received the date. And so I asked my friend again. I said, you know, that didn't they say we were going to have a meeting? And they said, yeah. So finally he called him. He says, you have a date. And on the very last day that the board was meeting, because they meet 3 times a year for a week and see cases during that time. And so I was there the last day. They said, oh, you don't have to come to the meeting. I said, well, you guys haven't even spoken to me for 3 years. Nobody's talked to me at all. I said, I should come to my own case, shouldn't I? And they said, no, you don't need to come. And I said, well, wow. So I told my friend and some medicine men, some Native American medicine men, we all sat in the bleachers, the public bleachers, where the public can view what the medical board is doing. So we sat in the public bleachers, and when my case was about to come up, the medical director dismissed the whole board and for a private executive meeting. And then they all filed back in and sat down and introduced my case number. And she asked if there were any questions. And all the board members just said, nay, 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 all 12 of them. And then she asked, well, motion to dismiss. And they said, yay, 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 yay. So they dismissed my case. But whatever, I don't even know. I mean, it was total harassment to keep me in limbo for all those years for nothing. It was incredible.
So wait, what did that mean they dismissed your case? That the charges against you were dropped and that your medical license was basically valid?
Was valid.
Mm-hmm.
But then I tried to, you know, and that was great. Okay, so I made that step, and then I went back to the residency program, and they just dismissed my case like I didn't even exist, and I was never fired or anything, but I couldn't get my job back. Mm-hmm. And there was just craziness, and so I kept on digging and digging and trying to find out what happened, and I finally got a lawyer. Went to most of the lawyers in town, and they all belonged to the hospital, so they couldn't see my case. And then you can't sue the medical board because it's a licensing entity, and
yes, they're immune. Yeah.
So they're immune, and so then I went to the newspapers, and nobody wanted to touch my case at all. And so this one journalist, I told him what had happened to me being railroaded. And some people, they didn't believe me, but he believed me. And he said, you know what? Let me tell you a story. So there was this woman and man, and they had figured out about the loan problems with the bank. Savings and loan, and they lived on the mountaintop, one of the little mountaintops here in a very wealthy part of the city in Phoenix. And she kept on asking questions, and they told her to stop asking questions. And one day the guy was coming down the mountain in his car, and he was found dead, and the coroner said it was natural causes. I said, natural causes? He said, yeah, natural causes with a bullet hole right in the middle of his head. He said, do you understand what I'm trying to tell you, Bobby? Do you understand? You know, because I was trying to... I went to the police and gave them depositions about these drug people and what they were doing and how they were having doctors write death certificates for people that they had killed, saying natural causes. And this journalist said, you know, basically, he says, if you continue to do what you're doing, you know, these people are going to kill you, Dr. Robbie. They're going to kill you right out. And that's how I see I can foretell your future. You're going to have a bullet right in your forehead, and it's going to be labeled natural causes.
Right. And that's why I played the tape I played at the beginning of the show, where now I'm being called and told I'll be disappeared. But I know that you didn't let that scare you, because
No.
you continue to speak the truth, and that's
right.
What all of us have to do. And also realize, because our situations are so similar, I also went to the police knowing that they were killing people in the hospital, all kinds of things. Once you understand this Masonic organization, which in medicine is called the Anti-Hippocratics, you can actually go to cafepress.com, go to the Medical Masons homepage, and see that you can get you know, an apron to do barbecue that says medical masons, golf shirts, all this stuff. I mean, they're actually not even hiding. But once you realize what that actually means, and the fact that the masons protect each other, in the high levels, the police, the judges, they're all masons. And this is why the evil has been allowed to continue as it has been able to continue. So we're actually out of time, Dr. Robbie. I want to thank you so much for being on the
show.
Thank
you.
Remind the listeners to tune in on April 29th when her husband, J.B. Campbell, will be on telling the listeners of this show what his solutions are. And do you have a website? I don't think we answered that question.
I don't have a website right
now.
Okay.
All right. I would suggest that you make one because you have very important information to share with others. But in the meantime, people can go to her husband's site, J.B. Campbell Extremism Online .com, and check out what he says our solutions are. So thank you so much. Keep in touch. And definitely keep on doing what you're doing, especially trying to educate the Native peoples as to the threat that the medical mafia is on their very survival.
Right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay.